Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide-leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine conflict. Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft has returned from his time in Ukraine, speaking with all of the observers and participants in a long and mysterious conflict that requires history, requires sociology. It certainly requires question asking. And Anatole has been asking questions of the Ukrainian government, Ukrainian patriots, Ukrainian citizens. And now we address what he's learned about Crimea. We're focusing on Crimea, the question of Crimea. Why? Because in the news is much attention to leaks in the U.S. The FBI and other investigative bodies pursue the leaker. However, much of the focus in the first days, while there was confusion about the documents, focused on what the documents say about Ukrainian opportunities for the counteroffensive. That's what it's called. And a headline in the Wall Street Journal makes this case. Ukraine confident in spring counteroffensive despite leaks, Pentagon chief says. Anatole, a very good evening to you. Thank you very much for joining. The counteroffensive by Ukraine, much in the news these last weeks because of the buildup of arms, what's needed, Ukraine saying get us the weapon systems faster, the doubts raised about training, about preparation, about casualty numbers. What did you hear about this counteroffensive while in Ukraine? Is it a real thing or is it, you know, next year in Jerusalem, a vision of utopian future? Good evening to you.
Hello, John. I heard, of course, a lot about it at the level of, you know, talk, but nobody was going to reveal, you know, any details about it to me. Indeed, it's clear from the leaks that the Ukrainians have been very cagey, even with the United States on the subject. Now, of course, I mean, the great majority of Ukrainians are strongly hoping that the offensive will be successful. The only thing is that some people I talk to in Zaporizhia who still have relatives, I mean, often grandmothers, living under Russian occupation in the south of the province, in Melitopol city, for example, they did worry, of course, that if the Ukrainians break through and the Russians make a stand in Melitopol, then, like Mariupol and Bakhmut, Melitopol will be destroyed, and obviously their relatives will be endangered. But I think the great majority of Ukrainians would see that as an acceptable price for victory.
Some history needed to understand the debate. Crimea and Donbass, the easternmost part of the country, east of the Dnieper River Valley. Is that Ukrainian? Is it Russian? Has it gone back and forth between empires for the last, let's pick a number, three centuries? What is it?
Three centuries ago, it was largely uninhabited and disputed between the Crimean Tatars, backed by the Ottoman Turkish Empire, who kept it uninhabited by repeated slave raids. We should remember that our word slave comes from Slav, because the Tatars captured so many Ukrainians and Russians and sold them as slaves in the Ottoman Empire and beyond. Now, the Crimean Tatars were fought by Ukrainian and Russian Cossacks, who had their base actually in what's now called Zaporizhia. And Then, later in the 18th century, the Russian Empire, under a succession of rulers, ending with Catherine the Great, defeated the Crimean Tatars and the Turks and captured this region for the Russian Empire, and then settled it with a mixture of Ukrainians, mostly Ukrainians, and Russians, but also some Germans were invited in by Catherine, Bulgarian and Serbian refugees from the Ottoman Empire, and founded a set of cities. I mean, the cities of southern Ukraine in the past had Russian imperial names. Zaporizhia was founded as Alexandrovsk, named after Tsar Alexander. Other cities were named after Catherine. What's now called Dnipro was Yekaterinoslav. This has caused the Ukrainians, of course, a lot of heart-searching when it comes to renaming them and choosing the names with which to rename them. This, of course, has led the Russians to claim that this ought to be Russian territory because it was conquered from the Turks by the Russian army. The Ukrainians say with equal reason that most of the people who settled it were of Ukrainian ethnicity, and so historically it's Ukrainian. And, you know, which line you take depends, historically speaking, on which country you identify with. Under international law, of course, there's no doubt that this region is Ukrainian.
We come to the 20th century then. Therein lies a repeated dispute about Crimea in particular. It was Russian. It based the Black Sea Fleet. It was access to the warm waters of the Mediterranean. And then a decision made by Nikita Khrushchev, who was not a Ukrainian. I believe he was married into a Ukrainian family, but he's clearly a Russian, transferred Crimea to Ukraine. And that seems to be contended by all sides. Is it a fact? And does that transfer have weight as sovereignty?
Well, it's certainly a fact. I mean, until 1954, Crimea was part of the Russian Soviet Republic, and then it was transferred without, of course, any reference to the wishes of the population to the Ukrainian Soviet Republic. To mark the anniversary of Ukrainian accession to the Russian Empire. Now, of course, since then, the Russians, and it must be said, by the look of things, a majority of the Crimean population have said that, you know, Crimea naturally belongs in Russia. Ukraine, of course, has said that under international law, the borders held by the Soviet republics at the time of independence in 1991 are legally valid. But this particular history of Crimea, and also the fact that a majority of the Crimean population regard themselves as ethnic Russians, and you know, not just according to the Russian referendum, which could be, of course, faked, but to many opinion polls, a majority do want to be part of Russia. So Crimea is rather different, both emotionally, but to some extent also legally and politically, from the other areas occupied by Russia. And as you say, it's also home to the naval base of Sevastopol and the Russian Black Sea Fleet, which is not only strategically vital for Russia, but because of two famous historical sieges, also has colossal emotional weight for Russia. Now, most Ukrainians, according to opinion polls, but also ones I talk to, believe that Ukraine must recover Crimea. However, there are a significant minority who, at least in private, are willing to accept that Crimea is different and that it may be necessary to leave it in Russia. However, these people are very, very wary of saying anything of the sort in public.
Yes, in your article at Foreign Affairs, I explore these positions. The maximalist position is the war ends when Crimea and Donbass are recovered and we negotiate with the Russians for the complete withdrawal of Russian troops. Maybe there's some more demands, but that's what I read quickly. The whispered position of negotiate now deals with the checkered history of Crimea and the people who live there. And in between is everyone else waiting for this counteroffensive. Is the understanding, if the counteroffensive exists, it will settle the matter. What happens then is going to be the end of the war. Is that the thinking?
Well, that's the hope, of course, because, you know, people in Ukraine obviously are war-weary by now, and many want the war to end, especially those, of course, with sons or husbands serving in the military. But I fear that this is probably an illusion, because Ukraine is very unlikely to win such a complete victory that, you know, it takes back all the territory lost. And so then the question will become, will Ukraine, as many in Washington and also in Western Europe want, having regained some territory, key amounts of territory, will Ukraine then negotiate with Russia over a territorial compromise? Now, one Ukrainian official has hinted at this recently, but the great majority still say no, there will be no negotiation. Russia must simply leave all the captured territory, which, quite frankly, Russia will never do. Russia will never voluntarily leave Crimea, at least. And, you know, there have been some pretty severe warnings that, faced with a threat to Crimea, Putin would escalate in terms of direct or indirect attacks on the West, intended to push the West towards a negotiated settlement.
I'm speaking with Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. His new article about his time in Ukraine, it's in foreignpolicy.com, about these positions of, about particularly Crimea. And when we come back, what is the Russian presentation about Crimea? Is there negotiating room there? Unlikely, but does it exist anywhere given the scale of troubles that Russia has brought upon itself since the attack in 22. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
What if every student had a tutor and personalized learning was available to everyone? What if every family had a financial guide and their investments made for an optimistic future? What if every doctor could diagnose you in seconds and healthcare visits felt more personal? What if your business never slept and every customer's shopping experience felt like it was designed especially for them? It can with Agentforce, the powerful AI from Salesforce.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Not all meals are created equal. For instance, breakfast has the spicy egg McMuffin for a limited time, and lunch doesn't. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.